I think it's first of all wise to remember this is the very early days of this new pontifical council, and it already has a charter given to it. But of course, there's then to be a synod about the new evangelization next year. So these are preliminary first steps. And the gathering today was very interesting. When I first saw the list, I wondered, well, why am I on this list? Because it's an interesting group of dioceses from across Europe. And the purpose seemed to me this to try and see through ways in which some sort of pilot scheme could be done through these dioceses, very much cooperating with each other as a joint expression of working together on the evangelisation that's needed, recognising both we face similar challenges, but also very different ones from one city to another. So that's what today was all about.
So why Liverpool in particular, do you think?
Well, I don't know. Because in a quite serious level, this may be the point. As far as I could tell, by far, Liverpool is the smallest of the cities in terms of Catholics represented there today. For example, if you compared us with the numbers of Catholics in Lisbon, Barcelona, Paris, Dublin, we are very small indeed. And of course, as perhaps I've shared with the listeners in the past, the reality of still demographic decline is a very big factor of the life which we're having to live. The other thing might be because, and this may not have been conscious, but it seems to me that the economic crisis, which has got to be part of the context of anything we now do as church, it's something that hits Liverpool very sharply indeed, especially if we seriously take that part of the roots of the economic crisis, I believe, are the changed relationship between at least some cities in Europe and the whole world. It was an African bishop who, in 2008 in Liverpool, when the economic crisis began, said what is happening is the end of the slave trade, that all the wealth that came to, especially Western Europe, but not just there, from either Africa or South America, that is over. And we're having to think of ourselves in a very different way.
So you were looking very closely at economic issues, political, social issues, and the role of the church within
It was a very broad discussion, and it varied from place to place because, as I said, it is. I don't think any city is hit as hard as Liverpool is. And the example I gave demographically, there was a time between the main railway station and the river, which was barely half the territory of the city. There once were nearly a million people. Today, the whole city is 450,000. And I once had a conversation with the Archbishop of Detroit, and he said, I wanted to meet you because we are unique in the world, the two cities with the greatest demographic decline, which creates specific questions. And of course, it is a symbol, if you like, of the changed relationship of Europe with the rest of the world. The example I give on our waterfront, for which I'm grateful, there's a derelict tobacco warehouse, the largest there ever was in the world. And it's now derelict, but it stands there as a reminder of when, in the initial days, there was this dreadful triangle: slaves, Africa to the Americas, raw materials, Americas to Europe, finished products, Europe to Africa. And I'm glad it's there. It says, think about your past.
So a reminder of the past, but also looking to the future and how the church is coping with these vast demographic changes.
Well, for us, but I didn't hear it from anywhere else. I think it's quite, as far as I can tell, those bishops I spoke with, all their cities are still seeing an increase in the number of people who live in their cities. Some have the question of a growing number of people who are not Christian in their cities, but we are simply still in demographic decline. Not true across the whole of England. Where I was bishop before, only 30 miles away in Manchester, that city is still growing, but has an increasing number of people, for example, who follow the Muslim religion. So diversity within 35 miles.
Difficult in a meeting like this to come up with any real guidelines,
absolutely,
any real ways forward.
But the point may be, I do think there is something very strong when precisely those with diverse experiences speak with some united vision as to where we want to go. And I think it's rooted in the model which St. Paul gives of the church as the body of Christ, where he dares to say the weakest members are indispensable. I think that's one of the most precious lines in the New Testament. In other words, the sign the church gives is not a sign which can only cope with those who are terribly strong in their faith and in their convictions. But part of the sign is our family includes the people hanging on by their fingertips. That's part of the sign we give. I was intrigued, I just noticed the Holy Father's words at the Angelus talking about the God who doesn't force us to love. He invites us. That's it.
If you're looking at ways to try and strengthen the church in these very uncertain situations, whatever they may be in these different contexts across the European continent, what kind of ways were you looking at, perhaps, in which the church can really be encouraged, supported, strengthened in its mission?
Two ways. First of all, we're already starting in the diocese a programme of trying once more, because others have tried, to take seriously the rite of infant baptism, which the new gift in that rite, which Pope Paul VI gave us. We did baptise babies before then, but we used a version of the adult rite. It was Paul VI who gave us the rite of infant baptism. And the significant difference was the whole focus is on the parents. And they are described as the first and prayed that they may be the best of teachers. We are just starting, and so far the signs are very good, of shifting the emphasis in the whole of the formation of children for celebrating sacraments from catechists who work with the children to catechists who work with the parents to enable the parents to work with the children. It's a long journey, but the first signs, we've only been seeking to do this for a few weeks, but where we've had little pilot projects, it has been very, very encouraging.
Supporting family life, in fact, as well as...
Exactly. And one of the things I've done when celebrating confirmation, or indeed whenever I've been present, for example, not at a First Communion Mass, because that would be rare, simply being a bishop, but where the First Communionists have come together, I invite the parents to renew their baptismal promises, not the children, and invite the parents to place their hand on the shoulder of their child. It is quite extraordinary. Very simple, very small, but you suddenly realise that whereas if the children do it, it's a video moment to video their children. When the parents do it, it becomes a very still moment and you suddenly feel a real engagement, and it's very good for a bishop to find nobody is looking at me. Their focus is genuinely parent to child, child to parent. And so it's small, but it does show that that vision Paul VI gave us, we must work at it. And that's one small thing we're doing. And we had a launch week and 64 priests came. And the same day they were meeting, there were something like 200 teachers meeting to talk about the same thing. And over the course of the week, I think it was over 300 catechists. Now, we were quite staggered. In other words, it's as if people were saying, let's try. I think the other focus, because of the context and the example I gave, the cost of fuel for heating houses rising by 18% on the 1st of September. Every week, people who do the shopping remind me the price of food is inexorably rising. That is the context. Unemployment is growing. The resources for those in need are diminishing. I think the phrase we need above all, it's, I think, like the spirit of Pope Benedict, it's so wonderful on this. The spirit, I think, at this time is carry one another's burdens. If we show we are carrying one another's burdens, within, if you like, the Catholic family first, but then reaching out to others, I think that's the way the Lord gathered people around himself.
Liverpool has a particular tradition, doesn't it, in a sense of caring for those?
Well, it goes back, of course. One of the great, great men in that was Father James Nugent, who in the days of the vast number of immigrants from Ireland after the famine and the horrors of their pain, they came in their tens of thousands. He saw the need and established a response to a great variety of needs. And amazingly, on his death, by public subscription, not Catholic subscription, the statue was placed in his honour in the gardens at the town hall. And there it stands to this day. It's very special. And I think in the same spirit, what I think is a beautiful gift to people who come to the city, the statue, I think it was opened 2 years ago now, to Archbishop Warlock and Bishop David Shepherd, who in the city's darkest days in recent years accompanied the people of the city. And the artist has given us a challenge. It's, if you like, it's on three circles. On one circle stands Archbishop Warlock, on the other, Bishop David Shepherd. The third one is empty. And the artist, Stephen Broadbent, says, each one of us has got to decide, will we stand on that third circle and continue their work or not? Without that being occupied, we're walking past. Quite a challenge.
Archbishop Warlock, of course, the former Catholic Archbishop, David Shepherd, the
Anglican Archbishop, yes.
A huge example of ecumenical cooperation.
And interesting, we had a wonderful visit from Cardinal Casper last year. Mainly a small thing, but we've one of the last steps in the beauty of our marvellous cathedral is the incorporation of eight pillars in glass outside. And the artist was a personal friend of Cardinal Casper. So we managed for the Cardinal to come to bless them. And it was Pentecost Sunday, the year when we have the two cathedrals walk, when we walk from one cathedral to the other along Hope Street. And the Cardinal said this is a model for many, because he found the fact it was an organised procession, but you could keep changing who you were walking with. And he said, this is so easy, and you're clearly so natural with each other that there's nobody surprised it's happening. But similarly, a very personal one, but some time ago now, my driver died, a marvellous Catholic, and at his funeral, besides my homily, the Anglican bishop spoke. And nobody considered it as odd. It was just right. I think that was so important. Nobody said, oh, how amazing. They took it for granted, of course he would be there.
So great progress in ecumenical cooperation that continues the legacy, if you like, of Warlock and Shepherd.
And recently, I mean, it's rather curious, the city is deprived because I've had 3 months because of a new hip, and now Bishop James has had a bypass, so he's off for 3 months. So the city has to manage with one or the other, but it can't have both of us for a little while.
Liverpool, then, is clearly a model for perhaps ecumenical cooperation, and yet the challenges of a secular world remain very much at the forefront, don't they?
They do and they don't. But I think the reason is that this sort of hard and fast like confrontation has not been part of our story. As I say, going back to Father Nugent, he wasn't doing it over against the city. He was doing it with the city. That seemed to me very, very important. And that has not gone. And again, when we had that marvellous conference joining together the bishops of Africa and Europe, CECAM and CCE, it was perfectly natural for the Lord Mayor to give a civic reception. And it was genuinely natural. Of course, this matters to the city. So I think that the model may be that sort of cooperation, which we've, in a sense, got used to. And it's not an easy road. I mean, Archbishop Warlock often said, sometimes you find yourself having to walk with people with whom on many things you will disagree, but you try. And in a way, the development of the cathedral site itself, whereas the roof had to be renewed by the people, then the city and the university worked together to develop the whole surrounding. So it is that site stands as a symbol of, here you have church, city and academia working together for all to be given an environment they can be proud of. The School of Design and Technology is deliberately designed so the students at their desks or where they work design look out on the cathedral. And they said, we want them to look onto a thing of beauty as they work. Now, that's cooperation. So I think we have a lot to be thankful for.
And perhaps to offer other cities around Europe, across the continent,
I think it probably depends on their story, their history. But of course, there is also the factor that in Liverpool, so many people still are Catholics compared with other, let us say, cities in England. But of course, some cities in Europe are massively more Catholic than we are. But the element of cooperation is a long tradition. It's not new.